the subject that I'm going to talk about today is actually the top three blocks. Normally, those are the high-speed transceivers. And we have three connectors, in each of which is the QSFP connector, which is basically four lanes of high-speed duplex transceivers. So that's, I did some testing with those transceivers using the dev kit, and I just wanted to talk about that today. So just to show what is involved in incorporating these transceivers into a design, I just wanted to show the layout associated with that. So the transceivers are here. This is actually the top layer, shows one of the transceiver connections, so it comes straight to this SOM module's FMC connector. There's no other chips or anything required in between. You just need a high-speed differential trace on your board.
What's high-speed?
This transceiver, I think the max speed is 13 something per second.
Sorry?
13.
13 gig
per second, that's the highest,
so
that's like chip to chip. And yeah, 10 gig of data.
Okay.
So that's basically for chip to chip on the board. Then they have a lower specification for backplane, and then for external, maybe lower than that, but that's the max. So there's four of those, so each of them is capable of 10 gigabits. Each of the transceivers is capable of 10 gigabits per second, so that's 40 gigabits per second on each QSFP connector. And there's three of them on this board. So in order to do the testing, I purchased this carrier board, which is a PCIe carrier board. It had some QSFP and SFP connectors on it, so that's the reason I bought this carrier board. And then this is a small loopback board that is designed for this FMC connector. So it provides you loopback connections on all the LVDS pins, as well as I think 10 transceiver channels are loopback. So can be used for some testing. Now, in order to test this transceiver, I had never worked with transceivers on FPGAs before. So I was a little intimidated because there's quite a bit of documentation on it. These are pretty complex devices, but I just wanted to give it a try. And one place I go to is the Altera Wiki, which has a lot of examples, and they provide you the complete project file and a little bit of documentation so you can get started. So this is where I pulled my first example from. And it was a design that was relatively low speed, 1250. I think 1.25 gigabits per second was the speed for that project. So I got the archive, and these were the components basically in the project. So this is the main physical layer component, which is IP that is provided with the Altera Cortex software. This is a reset controller. This is the PLL, and that's basically the data generator that I used for testing. It was just a clock to create a ramp waveform. So there is a feature in this physical layer where you can set a bit, and it'll just internally loop the transmitter to the receiver to do some quick tests. So that's what I tested first. And the ramp waveform, the sent waveform and the receive waveform is shown there. And by looking at it closer, you get some idea of the latency in the transmission. So based on the clocks I was using, it was measured to be about 50 nanoseconds. And then I expanded the design to have two of them, and then use an external loopback with that loopback board that I had purchased, and did some measurements with that. So So in this design, you basically have a duplicate of these two components, the physical IP and the reset controller, and you use the same PLL. And the measurements there, here I'm showing the test with an actual SFP cable. So this is just a electrical copper cable. That's the half meter SFP cable. And the timing measured with that is, this is what I found, about 55 nanoseconds. So what I was doing was from one lane I was transmitting to the other lane and then transmitting it back. So both the paths, the timing is shown here. So it's slightly over the internal loop back, as you can expect.
So this covers the transmission and reception of something. It doesn't include packing and unpacking.
It includes that because the first waveform is the source inside the FPGA.
Mm-hmm.
The counter that is.
Does it get packed into a something with a header or a Ethernet?
So I tried to see
something.
What type of encoding it was using. I mean, there's I can show you when I show the protocol sheet. It used a particular protocol from that. And
okay, there was a particular protocol it used.
Yeah, it does the basic 8x10 encoding.
Does that?
And then depending upon the protocol, there's a they can be different levels added to that. So yeah, this is with the half meter electrical cable. And the next one, I did it with an optical cable. So that's the sample that I have shown connected to the board here. It's a 10 meter active optical cable. So it has the transducer, optical transducer as part of the cable. And here you can see the time went up by another 8 nanoseconds for the transmission. And I did not try to optimize the transmission line much, just tested it as it with the default settings. But I'll talk a little bit about how you can tune these transmission channels.
Can you give me this, how much did it change from the copper to the wire?
8 nanoseconds.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, there's 10 meters of length here.
Yeah,
the other one was only half a meter.
Third, there should be 60 nanoseconds increase. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I measured. So in terms of the protocols, it's a 5 pages in their handbook. It's a whole bunch of protocols that they support. And regardless of what hardware you're connecting your hardware to, you should be able to find some common protocol that can be used. So that's and all this is based on the physical, the Altera physical IP core that comes free with the Fortis. So there's no IP to be purchased to use these protocols, and that includes Ethernet also. Now there's another tool that I found very interesting to use. This also comes as part of Fortis. It's called Transceiver Toolkit. So you can use this to kind of change the parameters of the communication channel, as well as do some optimization. And it was quite useful tool, I think, that would be helpful trying to tune the main transmission. So this was the toolkit being used to just monitor one of the loopback cards that I had loopback for 10 transceiver channels. So each of those channels is shown in a row there, and it's not very clear here, but one of the indicators here is the bit error. I think this is the bit error rate, and the settings, the for the transceiver are shown here. This is like the DC gain, the VGA, things like that, equalization. So there are different settings for that, and you can change that and see how it affects the bit error rate of your transmission. You can also do some more sophisticated tests and tuning where you can say, I want to try a range for this particular parameter, and it will go and run the test for a specified number of time, seconds, and give you the bit error rate for that, and at the end you can get a list of a report, and you can see at what setting it starts, the bit error rate starts to go down, and you don't need to set it any higher than that.
So this is a simulation with knowledge of the chip parameters.
Yeah, it's not a simulation. It's actually this toolkit gets information through JTAG from the chip while the test is going on.
Oh, so you're actually running a loopback test, and you can change all these parameters and check how the loopback works and bit error rates and
error rates.
Real that's a live eye diagram.
Yeah, and you can generate this eye diagram, and so it's a very powerful tool, it looks like. I didn't play with it much, but I saw that it can be used for fine-tuning channels.
Mm.
And there's a lot of nice YouTube videos that Altera has made, and anybody wants to look at those, I have given some references here. So the first one is for the song. The second one is the place I got the example from. The third one is some videos about the transceiver toolkit.
Do you think it's best, or is it okay for me to put it up on DocDB and start a page for our meetings here? We'll collect these. Okay.
Nothing proprietary here. This is all in the public domain.
Okay.
This SOM module, I purchased 10 of them. It was like $1,750, I believe, each. If you buy the kit, it comes with this dev kit. It comes with this simple carrier board, and that package is like $2,500.
You showed a PCIe dev.
The PCIe carrier board was sold separately. I bought that just to test the transceiver. That I think was about $700.
And did you say that the SOMs are actually on FMC ports?
The SOMs have FMC connectors, both on the top and the bottom. So there's four connectors. One is a high pin count connector, the other is a low pin count.
Is FMC define the pins?
It's according to the FMC standard.
Okay, so
it's not strictly compliant, they claim, because some of the voltages that are supposed to be present at certain pins, I think they don't comply with that or something. It's not 100% compliance, but I think they try to meet that.
Okay.
You said there's another board that's a smaller, cheaper version of the SOM.
Yes, I forgot to mention that. So this one. This is the largest Aria 10 SoC available. That's with the 660K logic elements. They sell a version of the SOM exactly pin compatible, but with about half the resource. So I think it's 270K logic elements, and that's half the price. So if you don't have need for all the resources, you can get one for around $900, $800.
So the half price one is $900?
Yeah.
What do you plan on running on the HPS hardcore processor?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
At this point, we need to have our ACNET interface go through that, because the HPS is the one that's driving the Ethernet ports. Two of them are available here. And we've already done a little bit of that with our Cyclone SoC. It has to be formalized and adopted for this. It's the exact same processor. Same dual core processor, only it can run, I think, a little higher clock speed. This is like 1.6 gigahertz, but the Cyclone, I believe, is like 900 megahertz, and maybe that's all I had.
Well, good. Well, thank you very much. I think it's good, at least good food for thought, and it looks like, you know, it's something that because that's one of the things that we're looking for in a specification of a new system, is something that we could either we can manage as engineers here, or that we can contract to be done, a common architecture that could be easily specified to go out for bids and be done somewhere else with some of the FPGA stuff done when it comes. Those for the candidate solutions, you know, I think it's price, it's the ability to design with these things, having the tools and within our grasp to do the things we need to do here, and then the possibility of doing things outside, and then meeting the spec. And so I think the next thing we'll lead into is starting to work toward a spec. Go ahead.
Did Reflex supply you with the Linux image to run on the HPS side?
Yes. They give quite a good set of examples. So I ran all the test programs that came with it, and one of them was basic Linux.
So we'll take other ideas. If someone else wants to get up and propose hardware or methods, we would like for you to let me know, and we'll try to get you in for a presentation, because I think it's very informative. It gets people thinking, gets people understanding when someone says something. Maybe after an explanation like this, you have a little more visualization of what that might look like. So these are good. We have two more meetings scheduled after this, but we can schedule more as long as people want me to schedule more. And we have time. And we have time. But there's other efforts going on that we'll hope to merge with. There's, of course, the MPS specification. This next Tuesday, Paul Derwin's having a value engineering exercise where they may think about things like this. And they may think about I don't know what they're going to think about, but they're going to think about the DAQ and how to make it wonderful and maybe less expensive, or maybe we'll convince them that they have to do more. Yeah, I don't think about that. Right. And the controls modernization effort is going to be starting soon. Dennis, do you know about the controls modernization effort?
Well, I don't know a schedule for it. No.
But
next Wednesday at 1 here.
Next Wednesday at 1 here?
It's on the open packet.
Okay, so you and John, did you get a...
I didn't get that email.
I didn't, unless I misread it.
Oh.
And I would be next meeting is here at 2.
At 2. On Wednesday. Yeah, how about that? So these other efforts going on, and we'll modify. Since this is an informal effort, you know, I guess I should say that this is an informal effort. You don't get a budget code to charge to. At some point, formal efforts will take over, and so we just wanted to get worked up, get things going. Let's see, I have some slides now. How do I get them to work? Oh, there we go. Well, that's weird. Move this window away from the shared application. Well, maybe I have to stop sharing something. Is that right?
I think you're instead of sharing your screen, you're sharing an application.
Yeah.
And another application is covering your the application you want to share. It's a little weird.
Okay, we'll do this. See how that works. Okay, so this is the starting slide from last week. I added a few more slides to the set of slides. You must be Edward.
That would be me, yes.
Hey, so everybody, and you've been here how long?
3 months.
3 months. So everybody meet Edward. So, yeah. So tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a project scientist for PIP2, started mid-November. I came from EFRI. I spent 9 years working at EFRI, responsible for front-end, and I was kind of bringing up iterations there, commissioned the first three CRI modules. Actually, as of last week, EFRI commissioned the first Linux segment 100 cavities, took only 3 days to run two beams, two different beams, Argon and Krypton, so great success for them. Anyway, so before that, I spent some time working at Brookhaven and at Jefferson Lab, my kind of, and before that at Butker. So I kind of have a broad experience of rings, Linux, beam breakup, beam dynamics, pretty much everything. And I can work with Arduino as well, so it's funny.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're going to be valuable to the project. There's so many of us here, and we're going to have to leave it up to you to figure out who all these people are at some extent.
Yeah,
I don't think we're going to do that right now.
I'm still familiarizing myself. I mean, a lot of new faces, but generally speaking, I would say happy to be on board and honored as well.
Good. Well, a fresh face. You see how enthusiastic he is? He hasn't been worn down by any of this yet, so...
It's only
the fifth meeting today. Okay. All right. So these are my slides. Slides from last week. You're going to see them go by really quickly so that you can remember what happened. Let's see. As a follow-up to initial BOEs. Yes, that's what we talked about. The things going on, the physics and the machine requirements for data. How I had some notion of how the requirements of things would happen. I'll put these slides up and I can go over them. I'm still trying to write minutes from the last meeting and this meeting, so that will give people something to read to remember what we covered. I took a crack at possible things that we'll have to have requirements for, specifications for. I believe that there was a big issue was the MPS and being able to acquire data and transmit it and get it into the MPS logic quickly enough for them to make decisions and stop the beam. So the drawing that was on the board before, it was an illustration of the different places where you can incur latency. And so we realized that we have to make certain decisions about how we do things so that we reduce that latency. So we can get information from that happens on the beam to the MPS and then turn off the beam within 10 microseconds. But that was controversial, and we weren't quite sure whether it was from the beam event to the stopping of the beam that was 10 microseconds or something in between. You guys will let us know. So I actually had an agenda for the next meeting, determine which specifications will be common. So I'll ask that and we'll go around the room, see if people can list some things for me. Eventually we'll assign people to work. I think I'm kind of ambitious about doing work, it seemed, but we'll be doing presentations and thinking and people, please approach me when we get to something that you feel you should be doing. So I have that in mind. Arrange presentations for specifications. All right, doing that. Presentations by vendors. I was considering this. It looks like I'm going to have to add another meeting to do this. But the Reflex company that makes these boards, they came out back in November, October, and they seem like a very impressive engineering group. I think they have like 50, 60 engineers, and they do custom things like this board. and like the board that's on, that this board is on, they can create just about anything with fiber optic port inputs, followed by banks of FPGA connected to processors. And if we could specify something, they could probably build it within a reasonable price, and then we'd have it. I'm imagining that we will have things made that we could support, but if we can have them built outside, that will help the schedule and make hopefully make things a little more deterministic, because we'll choose companies that have strong engineering skills and a commitment to meeting the goals that we give them. But things that later on we could still take over in the future to when things get obsolete. That's the idea. This again was my illustration of how long the PIP2 LINAC will be. And then beyond that, there'll be more beam line that will take the beam from the LINAC to the booster. And all of that, plus signals from the booster, will have to come to the MPS system, as I understand it. In specifying what mediums we use to distribute data and how dense certain nodes of electronics need to be, it would be good to know the distribution of the electronics up and down the line. You know, it's like we have at some point, for at least for instrumentation, RF will have to do their own, or will help. It's like at this node, we're gonna need to digitize 32 signals. At this node, we're gonna need to digitize another 8 signals. At this location, we're gonna need to digitize more signals. And so it gives us some idea about the density of the electronics and the amount of data that would go to a particular front end, and the division of the grouping of digitizers with front ends, that so as not to create a bottleneck, and then the connection from all these locations to the control system so as not to create a bottleneck. And so we'll need to know how much data it actually is and where it's physically distributed. In previous talks, I talked about functional diagrams. If we get so far as to starting to write specs, I think functional diagrams could be useful. This was from the MPS FRS that existed last year, which was a good trial. I thought it specified quite a few things. And I think this diagram was taken right from that FRS. So if you zoom down into the beam instrumentation block that's up at the top, you can come with further functional diagrams, where this shows that you have beam parameters and timing and state coming into something to make decisions about sending data to ACNET and sending data to the MPS. You just know you're going to have to do those things. And then the output of the MPS system at that time had primary and secondary devices that turned off the beam. There was whenever an event occurred, all of these systems, they had a buffer that would be latched for what do they call it, diagnostic? What do you do after something dies and you want to do an autopsy? Post-mortem. You want to do a post-mortem analysis of why we had to turn off the beam. So all these things would have buffers, and there'd be some latch signal along with the decision to shut off the beam. So these things captured at a high level in a diagram, I thought that was useful. So let's see, where do we go from there? Operations data processes. So this was an MPS system that was related to beam instrumentation. I know the MPS system has a lot of a lot of other things that come in and go to a large summation. But for beam instrumentation, you need to collect the information from the beam somewhere, and then you have to make MPS decisions, MPS decision 1 through M. You have the post-mortem data that comes into some function of the MPS system to be then sent to the control system, or you can rearrange these blocks to say that this function is not of the MPS system, but the latch, the buffers state tells the other systems to send their data. You could tell the other systems to send their data to ACNET for the sake of the trip, and the MPS system will have it might have information about the decisions it made before the decision, after the decision, type of troubleshooting diagnostic that it might collect to send to the control system. This is all just imaginary stuff here.
So that's what you're. These are examples of what potentially could be done, not what we decided to do already.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
That's a better word than calling it a fantasy. But this is just kind of a sample of what one might think of, or what might be on the way. Okay, so digitizing beam parameters. In this diagram, we showed that, there's some device. You measure the beam parameter. There's some device in the beam line. You convert the analog signal. This is in most of our instrumentation systems, this function block is an actual board. And then you digitize the analog system. You distribute the digital data. So this data needs to go to MPS, to ACNET controls, and I'm recommending that we have one more path, one more possible link for the data to go to a third system. This third system could be used by machine learning people. I don't think, in my view of machine learning, I don't think it's something that you expect to be your primary thing that you put into your system. But it could be, once you start developing with the real LINAC, that someone in parallel could be developing a machine learning MPS that could learn every pulse. It could learn, if I understand machine learning, every pulse it could learn what a good system looks like. You know, you give it all the data, you tell it this is a good system, or you tell it this is the beam at this point ranks this, has a rank or something. And then so the machine learning stuff learns what a good beam looks like. And then when something comes in, when you decide to let it run, it would decide whether it sees something it's learned as to be as a good transmission of beam or not.
From an MPS point of view, it would be better off to learn what a bad system looks like.
Pardon?
You need both.
So, I mean, until you got total confidence in one, all right, you have to have the first one first. I don't think you can't be running beam non-protected, you know, while you're teaching the other machine. That just wouldn't work. So a third path could be included. This third path could also be used for high speed control, feedback control of some kind, where you use multiple parameters to decide what needs to be adjusted. Anyway, it's a functional block diagram. Okay, so I have sample implementations. I'm not gonna talk through them again, but someone can take these slides and look at them, block diagrams. So, these block diagrams showed that we had the original issue as to putting and we still have this issue, and I think it's something we'll talk about when we talk about MPS next Friday, is where do you put the MPS decisions? Where do you make the threshold comparisons? I think in some we have to look at a case by case, an input by input, to really decide what the best solution is. Because some inputs, they will absolutely need to know many other inputs. They may need to know the machine state, and they'll have different modes, whether you're doing startup or you're not running the beam like you normally do, and there'll be the steady state running. So there'd be different modes, and a good MPS decision may need to know other inputs. So you couldn't leave the MPS threshold decision in the very front. You'll have to get it back to where more information is coming in. But you need to look at the different MPS inputs to make, you know, to say that that's really the case. All right, so I went through that really quick. Let me go back. Okay, this is the new stuff. So I'm taking names. So who's going to send me the PIP2 interface spreadsheet? I'll collect this information. I'll do some work on it, and then if somebody and I'll show it, and then you can, the powers that be can decide who should be the person to.
You don't want to show that spreadsheet.
What's that? The interface spreadsheet?
Show that spreadsheet. It's Alex Martinez is collecting that data.
Okay.
There's a section for instrumentation, a section for MPS.
I think Alex is responsible for
it. He's responsible for
it. What's his name?
Alex Martinez.
So there's something in there that says, that helps us see what the common things are that each of the groups, the RF, instrumentation, cryo, vacuum, there's some communication specification.
I don't think those documents are detailed.
No, not that presently.
They're
high-level interface documents. Yeah. So
what do they tell you?
They tell you that MPS will need certain information from instrumentation.
Yeah.
They tell you that instrumentation needs control signals, trigger signals from controls.
Does it say which ones it needs?
Yeah, not full public. That's what Brian said. This is a high-level.
Okay, it just says we're going to, there's a pipe to this system. It doesn't define everything in the pipe. Is that?
Sometimes it does, sometimes, most times it doesn't.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's, all right. So we know where we are with that then.
But I think ICD is right, and the ICD documents, they don't specify people, but they don't know what level they are.
Right, that's correct. But not everybody's at the same level at the moment in terms of the ICD.
Okay, that's good to know. Vic, you have a list of the instrumentation for PIP2?
Yes.
So we'll start with that list, and then from that list,
sure,
we'll break it into systems and or categories and subcategories, I suppose, and then we'll be able to assign specifications for data rates and resolution and dynamic range and.
Some of that's been done. Some needs to be done yet, but I have been.
Yeah.
Or I can get it at least.
Yeah. To some extent, that's just particular to instrumentation. But when it comes to MPS, MPS will put specifications on those particular instruments.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you got that?
Well, so Martin's working on at least has something in mind.
Okay. Right. Could you send me that and I'll.
Well, we should talk afterwards.
Okay.
Lots of pieces.
Okay, very good. Vic will give me that.
Another thing that's not defined well is the machine data transmission system. We have both timing information and also what the beam payload is for the next pulse.
It's kind of like an MDAT, or?
Like an MDAT, only a lot faster.
What'd you call that? Machine data?
Well, I don't think anybody's defined it yet.
Oh.
Given it a name, but.
Is this something we need to define? Or somebody needs to define?
I think so.
Okay. We'll keep track of it, and then we'll keep bringing it up, and then eventually somebody will say, yeah, we're doing that. Machine data.
Yeah, but it's not well defined yet, I would say.
Have they started talking about that in controls yet?
Greg
Greg has a little bit.
Greg has a little bit. Okay.
But for instance, are there users for the beam structure on the following or the, you know, the following pulse?
Well, it brings to mind ring pickups. And ring pickups work differently with different beam structures, right? And if they're going to work, if we're going to want to get them to work well, would that's information they would get? I'm guessing. I'm making big guesses.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, when we go and we find that the beam structure impacts our measurement and impacts the accuracy at which we can make a measurement, then we would want to know. Maybe we want a port for that.
Yeah, it's something you may not know of until you measure it, though.
Is there a finite number of patterns?
Countably
finite?
I mean, I guess you can define it by formula,
okay, it's a little bit, it's complicated. It depends because the frequencies of two machines are not the same, and then you cut out only some percentage. I mean,
it can be known ahead of time.
The chopping pattern, yes.
When you hear it, yes.
But it's not limited to a defined number of states. You pass the state information ahead of time, but it's not
A through F. There'd be a pattern type, and even if the exact number, if you're going to pass that information along and it's somewhat arbitrary.
Imagine that you have a sequence of the beam. You take a mask with a different frequency actually, and you apply it, and that's how it's going to look like.
The mask would be a well-defined mask.
Yes. It's deterministic,
yeah,
for sure.
But if somebody's tuning the booster, changing the booster frequency, then that's going to be changing.
Then that changes everything, yeah.
Could be changed in one second.
Yes. Yeah, but you could define it.
So if it changes, you need some way to communicate the change, and
it needs to be parameterizable, right? As opposed to like a long giant string of ones and zeros.
What's
No, I think it's going to be a string of long ones and zeros.
Yeah. Because it won't match, but it's like your rational number.
Yeah.
Will it not just be bunch pattern, but also intensity per bunch?
Yeah, that's also a problem.
What? Not just bunch pattern, but intensity per bunch. Would that be
expected?
No, I think
like
it's
a tune-up or a physics pulse, for example.
I'm not sure. I think intensity per bunch is.
There's a potential for tune-up, though, as to run up intensity pulses.
You mean the. Right, I mean, it's not that it changes bunch to bunch. Right, but the intensity might change as well.
So is there information in the basis of estimates about what things, what I/O there is, what inputs we need to specify, what things we need to specify?
There's not really technical information in the basis of estimates. It's basically saying we know how to calculate how much this thing costs. It's all.
How did they figure out how much things cost?
Well, we know what we're building, but we don't need to know.
But does it say what you're building in the basis of estimate, or does it just put a dollar number out there? It's in the basis. It's in the document, right? Maybe not the.
Not really. We don't get very specific in there. Like, sometimes we do something, but it's not. It's pretty high level.
That's a design.
Yeah, that's design documents.
This is all under review right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we can't get that yet. All right.
We have BOEs. Let's put it this way. We may not have the information you want.
Okay. Just as a department head, I should look at our BOEs. Just know what people are doing. Can you send those to me?
I thought I pointed you where they are, but I'll go over them. We should go over them together.
Yeah.
And you should know who the level 4 people are. I think you know that. For Andy, Nathan, and Nate.
Yeah, it should be something I work on. Okay. Very good. Like I said, if there's some way to estimate where the equipment's going to be and how much of the equipment's going to be in that location.
Yeah, so there's been space allocation meetings, who's been looking at more things like the RF power amplifiers, but a lot of discussion has been going on as to where we would put low-level signaling for crates, where we would do things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of been going on. I had to make estimates of how many locations we're going to have, so we have some preliminary estimates of where we're going to put stuff and approximately how much each location. But it's still in being developed, right? In terms of where we're going to go, because we're still laying out the floor plan.
Yeah, so if I think of a high level thing where, you know, if this is distance down the Linac, you know, we can just draw a big circle. You know?
That's kind of what we did.
And then you say there's X BPM signals coming in here, and there's X toroid signals, Y, X1 toroid signals coming in here.
Yeah.
There's Y RF connections, RF boxes here. And then down the line, particular to the MPS, you know, there's going to be an ACCT here and a digitization and an ACCT here. That's particular to MPS, that you want the MPS box or one of the boxes that look at this particular signal here. All right, and that's so many feet from here and so many feet from there. And maybe that comes into play when you're sending the signals, sending the data. Maybe knowing where things are, I think that helps you figure out. So we're trying to figure out an architecture. We're trying to decide what things matter, what things don't, and then for each. And then when you apply the architecture, you see if that architecture takes into account little things like space and data rates. A list of MPS inputs, well, I guess we'll talk about that next Friday. You guys are getting close to the set of things that you'll want into MPS. Okay. All right. And then location of the MPS electronics. So what else will help us start outlining the parameters and architectures to be specified? So we want an outline of all the things we want to specify. You know, and make sure we have a list, make sure that everything gets specified, or the PIT2 project has a mechanism for that already. Is that true? Okay.
Are there technical design documents and functional requirement specifications that some have been written, some haven't, but that's the mechanism how to get it into the PIT2 document system?
Okay.
We need more of those.
Good search on Team Center.
What's that?
Good search on Team Center.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. You're just being facetious now. Anybody else following this line of reasoning have any other suggestions?
So the only thing I would suggest is we keep a constant goal out of these meetings in mind. At least in my mind, that hopefully the goal is to come up with a common platform, and Brian will talk about the fabric of how we're going to end up communicating in PIT2 IT with data rates and data flows and hardware. Maybe Brian can come up. So we're always kind of trying to want to answer that question so we can come along and start getting more detail in our design.
So we can compare architectures and hardware available to implement those architectures, but then there's going to be cost. So cost, knowing how many inputs there are, is pretty important. Knowing the data rates for particular bits of data, if we're going to divide the system into high speed things and low speed things, and or even a middle speed set of things, we're going to divide things into things that get transmitted as digital words or things that get transmitted as a status, and then the different architectures, the different things that we can use to build the system, can be priced accurately that way.
So there's one other thing that we haven't paid a whole lot of attention to on this accelerator is ground structure to the machine. Probably should pay some more attention to that. Yes. Electrical
ground.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's it's another argument for fiber communication, based communications. Is there, a lot of Ethernet stuff, transformer couple too, but it's you definitely want to be running with either differential electrical signals or optical signals for long haul.
So we're ruling out long haul analog signals, probably.
Well, that's long haul single ended, I would think is troublesome. If especially if it has DC to a megahertz information content, something like that, you're susceptible to SCR spikes and such. Long haul runs, fissures, all the typical things that give us problems.
Anyway,
fiber is immune to that. That's all.
It's
for digital signals, but for analog, we're pretty much stuck.
Well,
I'm saying, do you spend the money to digitize this analog signal? Do you split analog signals? I mean, you could split an analog signal and send it to the instrumentation, and you can take that analog signal and amplify it and send it down the beam line to the MPS.
That would all be upstairs, not in the cave. So you're already going to go several hundred feet just before you can get out of the cave.
Just to get out of the cave.
Especially in the transfer line.
But then it would be split once you got out of the cave.
That's
if it was an analog signal. I mean, that's what we're doing now, but maybe we don't want to rule that out.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's all about the bandwidth. But one of the areas we're getting issues with 2IT is with our toric bands. And we need to better work on that, and I think IEEE should look more into that in terms of we're seeing a lot of ground bounce issues. Up 60 hertz all over the place.
So along with machine data, do we want to track the attention that's paid to grounding issues? I mean, we could track this as
probably
a status to see if to see if someone's doing it.
It's just something. It's just something that can be an issue in accelerators. Often is, and if you can come up with a structure or your communication standards that's immune to it, that's a big plus in that box.
Okay, and then so.
We put the whole building as one that was a network, ground network.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of time spent on
right.
Here I couldn't come in.
Who would that fall under for us? Is that building power? Or
really?
Yeah.
Infrastructure?
Yeah. I'm not sure, because Kermit was doing it for PIP2IT a little bit.
It's a hard thing to do, but
okay. Let me. I think I've kept you guys too long. Let me run down this list so that you've heard it once, and then we'll repeat it later, or I'll send out emails. Common elements between systems. So in the end, we want to figure out what the common elements between systems are. These were my ideas. High speed data to MPS, status bits to MPS. These are common standards that each different system should abide by, because MPS is going to want to receive everything from all the places the same way. The common elements will be machine timing and clocks, machine timing and clocks receiver hardware. You know, that might be something that everybody puts on their system is the same receiver for this timing and clock system. Machine timing and clock decoding firmware IP. So maybe even if people have different FPGAs, we have some VHDL or some kind of thing that's been proven, so everybody's not having to reinvent the wheel. They can put in their boards. So common transmitter receiver hardware, common transmitter receiver firmware IP, things that we share, common hardware and subsystems, common hardware and sub. So, I mean, we could all go off and design things on different FPGAs and different boards, but maybe we can find things that we really should be using the same hardware for. I think that's it. So, something to think about, soak on for next time, or if you, anybody that wants to give me an opinion that it's burning in their heart, you know, they're going to forget it if they just let it go, please send me an email or stop by my office. I think that'd be great.
I think identifying those 2 to 3 classes of performance of systems is important, certainly.
Okay.
Certainly, talking to a magnet power supply doesn't need the bandwidth of a VPN system.
And then, so the 3 classes of systems will have specifications so that people can look at their system and say, oh, do I fall in this class, that class, or the other class? If anybody wants to make suggestions on how to define the classes, or at least to start.
I can give you some LCLS examples.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Yeah. All right.
They also went for a common board, so essentially they run a PGA, and a lot of systems were using the same board, just given the contents. It saves a lot of money for the project.
I can be the collector of those things, or if PIP2 has a person, let me know that too. I can collect it and then pass it on later, also. But I think if we get the things that lead us to the specification of common systems in one place, then we could all look at it together and make decisions. Thanks. So you guys can go. Thanks for coming. Next time we'll look at more architecture ideas.
So this is the...
This is the carrier board for the dev kit. So this thing sitting here is the dev kit.
Okay.
And then I bought the bottom board separately, just so that I have these connectors that I can use to test. This one comes only with Ethernet and some USB.
Okay.
So that's a base dev kit. So this is what you can put on your board. So 2 FMC connectors here, there's identical ones underneath, and they're just mirrored pins. So you could have a board sitting here, you could have a board sitting here.
But ultimately you're designing a whole new board, right?
We designed our own carrier board, which is the VXI form factor. First board needs to go into a VXI box, but then the rest of them will just be inside chassis, standalone. Mm-hmm.
Is that 2 transmitters, 2 receivers in the orange, or is it one of each?
This is actually SFP, so that is
one lane.
Transmit and receive. This is the QSFP.
Okay.
So on my board, I have 3 of these.
Okay.
So this has 4 lanes of
transmit
and
receive.
Each. And each of those is 10 gigabits per second.
Oh.
Quite a bit of bandwidth.
Yeah.
It's nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Great grin. I'm the department head for instrumentation. I've been doing it for about a year. You know, I just try to do the management stuff. Call meetings when other people need them.
That's has to be properly defined in a project. And a lot of it will depend on the decisions that you make now. How is the infrastructure for all the communications, what approaches we use for, as I said, like for example, FreeView is the same board, I mean, the similar approaches that I see now, right? I mean, so the same FPGA and different boards. I think it was MKS Diagnostics was partly sitting on it, low level and high file systems, several systems were sitting on the same board.
Hmm. Well, if there's anything I could read,
I can find if you're interested. I mean, it might be easier the other way. I mean, if you let me know, because in principle I have all the documentation.
All right. Let me think. See, because that's the thing. We're trying to focus in on the things that we need to specify and the ways to do things. And I think I know I have a lot of people in the room all at once. If a lot of people see the ideas, then they're not confused when you come and tell them about it later. You know, they've seen it. They can either take it and use it, or they're familiar with it. So when it comes back, if it comes back around, they're not surprised, or you know, have to insist on something else. You know, everybody comes to an agreement. We need to get the timing stuff going. I wasn't going to try to take that on. That's the controls group's realm.
Yeah, one thing which is there will be a major issue right now on IP2 side is I don't want to even go into details how it all started, but I mean, there is obviously a disconnect. I mean, it's all the requirements. You need to really bring back all the requirements, maybe formalize them. I mean, Valery's CDR was done, I would say, pretty well. I mean, it's very, very good document. And then at some moment there was a disconnect with all these FRSs, the system was completely changed, and we are restoring kind of back physics requirements, I mean, in the sense of having like timing, reaction, resolution, all these kind of, I mean, of course the system owners will have their own requirements, but we need the general requirements from the system, and we're bringing them back.
They're bringing those back. They're bringing that effort back to get those defined and nailed down.
If I look at this moment, the FRS is in,
it's not very far along. I mean, they may have enough. The impression I get is they've done enough to get to the next review, but they don't have enough to get started with the design.
Yeah, I mean, this FRS is, I'm not sure I want to spend a lot of time reading that. There is a pulp fiction, light, and then we have FRS.
Yeah.
So anyway, there will be a major effort, I would say, to bring all this, and it's actually an IPR recommendation to bring physics requirement. And physics maybe extends a little bit beyond the AP.
Thanks.
In the sense of, like for example, I'm not quite sure if there is a requirement on MPS, like reaction time and all that. There are some numbers, I mean, in CDR, mm-hmm. but when you, I mean, CDR, PDR, how I see them, that they that's a snapshot of design at this moment, but we need some documentation that really is a requirement and we can take, because once you write PDR or CDR, you don't want to change it anymore. The requirements, you don't want to change them too, but I mean, sometimes they do a little bit get adjusted.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to get something so other people can start designing.
People don't have to read from there. And so 400 pages to figure out what the requirement is.
You told me on Monday that next week sometime we could talk about the MPS and what's there now. And
you know what?
10 cryo modules and so on next fall, spring, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When do you want to do that?
So we're going to have a meeting, visit by DOE.
Okay.
And I'm afraid it's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that. And Monday will be preparation. So maybe if we can do it towards the end of the week, like Thursday or something.
Let's do it the following week then, because I plan to come and say something here. Well, generally what
let's
we have.
Let's do it maybe week after.
Yeah.
Because Prakari will be here.
Because I have a very strong opinion about what we could do for what we need to do in April. If you really want to plan to run BEAM in April 2020,
yeah,
to protect cryo modules,
uh-huh.
There's some critical decisions that you obviously expect we have to make some critical decisions, right?
Just don't hit the walls.
No, I don't mean those decisions.
We have to start making stuff.
I don't mean that decision. That's the
writing FPGA code and putting.
No, I'm talking about how we get to that point where we don't hit walls.
Okay.
Right. But it's up to somebody to have to make the final decision whether or not
sure.
That makes sense.
No, in this sense, and Leah made me contact for PIP2 IT for this decision. So, that would be a proper.
I'm writing we talk about that. I'm writing some stuff that will help assist you in understanding what we have and where things are. So, see how it goes.
Okay, sounds good. So, maybe a week after, right?
Sure.
Or, I mean, the end of next week is fine for me, also, but actually.
I still, my family is still in Michigan, so I
have. Oh, no. Okay.
And I have to drive once in a while there.
Yeah, yeah. Next week is not a good week.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll keep hacking at it.
Nice meeting you.
All right, nice meeting you.